Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is the Municipal Broadcasting System. New York City's own station, WNYC, in the city where more than 7 million people live in peace and enjoy the benefits of democracy.
You're listening to All of It on WNYC. I'm Nancy Giles, sitting in for Allison Stewart. For the next installment of our weekly Andy in the Archives segment with NPR's Director of Archives, Andy Lancet, we're going to continue looking at historical innovations in food. And while we often like to feature cooking tips and recipes on this show, we can almost guarantee that you've never heard some of the recipes suggested in the World War II era show on New York Public Radio titled Homemakers of New York City. Excuse me. This show was built as a program on food and rationing with a silver lining, part information about what foods are available at the markets and part tips for making said food taste good. The show was hosted by the Markets Commissioner, Daniel P. Woolley. Joining Daniel was the director of the department's Bureau of Consumer Service, Francis Foley Gannon, and Susan Blair, who was the show's resident, quote unquote, inquiring homemaker. Andy, welcome to All of It. I'm going to cough again, sorry. So tell us about this first clip. Who are we going to hear from? Commissioner Woolley and Ms. Gannon?
Sure. Daniel P. Woolley was the Commissioner of Public Markets, Weights and Measures through 1943 and 44, and that, of course, was under the LaGuardia administration. And Francis Foley Gannon was a Deputy Commissioner and a regular voice on WNYC.
Okay, let's take a listen to the kind of foods that could be found at the market in March of 1943.
Good morning, everyone. Once again, we bring you Homemakers of New York City, the program on food and rationing with the silver lining, the Department of Markets program that tells you about all the foods you can get and how to use them. As Master of Ceremonies, we have Markets Commissioner Daniel P. Woolley. Francis Foley Gannon, Director of the Department's Bureau of Consumer Service, is here to answer your questions, and Susan Blair, our inquiring homemaker, is here to ask them.
Mrs. Gannon, suppose you tell us about the foods that are plentiful and not too expensive in today's market.
In fresh vegetables, you'll find good buys in anise, artichokes, onions, bunch carrots, yellow turnips, parsnips, and oyster plants. Spinach, celery, and celery knobs are moderately priced, although spinach is pretty hard to get. In fruits, Florida oranges, grapefruit, and tangerine range from cheap to reasonable. Apples continue abundant and are a good buy.
Andy, was this the kind of public service that New York Public Radio offered back then, telling you what you could buy with and without rations? I guess it was an important service.
Yes, this was pretty standard fare for WNYC during World War II with rationing and even afterwards with price controls on a variety of necessities. And Mayor LaGuardia in particular took to the airwaves each Sunday with his, this was each Sunday after Pearl Harbor, with his Talk to the People show.
Every Sunday.
Whoa. And it was an amazing level of granularity on the cost of peas and other vegetables and staples, the rationing of gas and rubber products, and the collection of scrap metal, all in the name of the home front war effort.
Right. So how long was Gannon's show on the air? And was it always like a housewife-geared show?
Yes, indeed. Gannon was greeting housewives for nearly three decades, beginning in 1934. And she actually followed in the footsteps of Deputy Commissioner of Markets Blanche Wiley Wellsmiller, who had established the department's presence here on WNYC and was known for presenting such recipes. And I know we have this on the site for, quote, that elusive vegetable, the eggplant.
Who knew the eggplant was elusive? Wow. What was her biggest self-proclaimed claim to fame?
Well, oddly enough, Gannon told the Staten Island Advance in 1954 that her greatest accomplishment at WNYC was to teach wholesalers, retailers, and housewives how to refrigerate eggs.
Whoa. Okay. I guess deeper than just opening the refrigerator and putting them in. Okay, but let's take a listen to how she recommends preparing spinach.
Why, if it wasn't our inquiring homemaker, Susan Blair. What's the matter, Susan? You sound as if you were down to your last blue ration stamp.
Oh, just about, Commissioner. The first 2 weeks have been the hardest. But seriously, I do have to watch my ABCs for the rest of the month. That's why I was so interested in Mrs. Gannon's list of unrationed fresh fruits and vegetables. Tell me, Mrs. Gannon, do you have any tips on how to prepare that spinach, the inexpensive spinach you just mentioned, so I can get my family to eat it?
Sure thing, Susan. Here's a recipe that will turn your most confirmed spinach hater into an addict. But you know, unless you buy spinach already cleaned, and that's another little service we'll probably have to dispense with for the duration, the first thing to learn is how to desand it.
Don't I know? I've heard we have to eat a peck of dirt before we die. But I don't relish eating it all at one sitting.
Well, here's how, Susan. Fill your dishpan or sink with lukewarm water. After cutting off roots and decayed parts, drop the spinach in the water. Let it soak a few moments. Then swish it around thoroughly in the water, using your hands or a spoon, and let it stand undisturbed a few moments. Then lift the spinach out of the water. Discard the water, rinse pan or sink thoroughly. Repeat this washing process at least twice again, each time using fresh lukewarm water and lifting the spinach out. A fourth washing is necessary only if the spinach is very sandy. The warmish water helps dislodge soil and sand more quickly. Allowing the spinach to stand in the water a moment permits the sand to settle to the bottom. Lifting the spinach out of the water prevents the sand from catching on the leaves again, and thus undoing your good work.
Now don't tell me, Mrs. Gannon, you let all that good sand go down the drain. I should imagine it'll be full of vitamins and minerals from what you've been telling me.
Never mind the interruption, Mrs. Gannon. I can see the commissioner is a spinach rebel. What's the recipe now?
Well, you can find plenty of them in any good cookbook. The main idea is to flavor the spinach with something that you do like. You can cook it with oil and a bit of garlic. You know, that's the Italian style. Or you can serve it mixed with crumbled, crisp bacon. Bacon and spinach seem to have an affinity for each other. The French sometimes use bacon fat instead of butter in order to add that subtle flavor.
You're pretty persuasive, Mrs. Gannon.
How sandy was that spinach?
Well, I don't know. Maybe it was a little more than a peck of dirt.
I know. I like that we're supposed to have a peck of dirt before we die. Oh, man. Finally, with spring just a few days away, I guess it's 48 hours and counting. Let's take a listen to Ms. Gannon's ideas of a properly fresh salad.
Suppose you give us a rough outline on how to prepare a green salad, Mrs. Gannon. I don't mean one of those things with a wisp of lettuce, a half a canned pear, and a blob of whipped cream, but a real He-Man salad.
All right, here I'll try. And here are some simple hints. First, rub the salad bowl with a cut clove of garlic. Then wash the greens and drain well so the excess water cannot dilute the dressing. You may use any kind of greens, but do include some fresh raw spinach. Break leaves in large pieces. To this, add some of the salad enhancers, such as the chewy bits of raw cabbage, cauliflower, sliced radishes, cucumber, raw beet, rutabagas, turnips, tomatoes. Fruit, if you prefer, may be used. Don't cut the vegetables too fine. Half the charm of a tossed salad is the large, interesting pieces of color. Then add spicy greens for additional color, as well as flavor. Hoops of green pepper, bits of parsley, chives, watercress, and even fresh scallions or onions. And don't forget to add some celery seed or mustard seed, bits of cayenne or red pepper, and a dressing that has been seasoned with a tarragon or wine vinegar so well that olive oil is not missed. Add only enough dressing to coat each leaf, as you toss the salad lightly. Leave no dressing in the bottom of the salad bowl. If you throw out the dressing, you throw out valuable nutrients and a precious salad oil. To ensure a crisp, fresh-looking salad, mix the greens just before serving.
You know, Mr. Gannon, it sounds a little funny, but I think a raw egg in a salad of that kind helps it a lot.
Indeed it does.
You know, Andy, just listening to this, it's fascinating because there was a period of time where a fresh salad, when I was growing up, was just like iceberg lettuce, tomato.
Sure.
And a dollop of mayo. But here, this is a more complex salad than it's kind of what we're used to today.
Well, WNYC was on the cutting edge.
Totally. Well, thank you so much, Andy,
thank you,
for joining us. And listeners, if you want to check out more gems from WNYC's archive, head to WNYC.org. And now to all of its collaboration with the Academy of American Poets and its Poem a Day project. It is the only daily digital poetry series. The Academy invited 12 guest editors to each curate a month of poems in 2019. And if you sign up at poets.org, a poem will appear in your inbox every day. And without further ado, here is today's poem.
This is Cedale Young reading my poem, Portrait in Nightshade and Delayed Translation. Portrait in Nightshade and Delayed Translation. In St. Petersburg, on an autumn morning, Having been allowed an early entry to the Hermitage, my family and I wandered the empty hallways and corridors, virtually every space adorned with famous paintings and artwork. There must be a term for overloading on art. One of Caravaggio's boys smirked at us, his lips a red that betrayed a sloppy kiss recently delivered, while across the room the Virgin looked on with nothing but sorrow. Even in museums, the drama is staged. Bored, I left my family and steered myself, foolish moth, toward the light coming from a rotunda. Before me, the empty stairs, ready to descend, ready to step outside into the damp and chilly air, I felt the centuries-old reflex kick in, that sense of being watched. When I turned, I found no one. Instead, I was staring at the return of the prodigal son. I had studied it, written about it as a student, but no amount of study could have prepared me for the size of it, the darkness of it. There, the son knelt before his father, his dirty foot left for inspection. Something broke. As cliched as it sounds, something inside me broke, and, as if captured on film, I found myself slowly sinking to my knees. The tears began without warning until soon I was sobbing. What reflex betrays one like this? What nerve agent did Rembrandt hide within the dark shades of paint that he used? What inside me had malfunctioned, had left me kneeling and sobbing in a museum? Prosta placat, osvobodi sebia, said the guard as his hands steadied my shoulders. He stood there, repeating the phrase until I stopped crying, until I was able to rise. I'm not crazy, nor am I a very emotional man. For most of my life, I have been called, correctly, cold. As a student, I cataloged the techniques, carefully analyzed this painting for a class on the Dutch masters. Years later, having mustered the courage to tell this ridiculous story, a friend who spoke Russian translated the guard's words for me. Just cry, free yourself. But free myself from what exactly? You see, I want this whole thing to be something meaningful. My falling to my knees in front of a painting by Rembrandt, a painting inspired by a parable of forgiveness offered by a father to his lost son. But nothing meaningful has presented itself. Even now, after so much time has passed, I have no clue what any of this means. I still haven't figured out whether or not I am the lost son or the found.
If you'd like to have a poem a day in your life, sign up at poets.org.